Cornerstone Gun Dog Academy. Online resources to help you train your retriever.
Welcome to the Built From Here podcast. On this episode, I'm super excited. We've got great friends, great guests, Steve and Sherry Strongman. And we're just so proud to have you guys on here. First of all, just for the work that you've put with your dogs, you've invested so much, and you've come a long way with them. And I'm excited to share that journey. So before we kind of like dive into y'all's story, your background, we just wrapped up Member Weekend. You want to talk through some of that and share what some of your thoughts were from this past weekend?
Yeah, the Member Weekend has always been a highlight for us ever since our first one was last year. This was our second one, and last year we were definitely nervous coming into it, but I always remember we weren't sure how Ellie was going to react around all the dogs, but we got out of the car and we're kind of easing our way up to the group, and we're there well, not late, but we were there right around registration time. So most of the people had already been there. And we had Ellie on a harness. I remember that. And Josh comes walking up the field and just kind of saunters up and introduces himself. And I'm like, wow, I'm seeing this guy in person after I watched all these videos. So that was pretty cool. And I remember one of the first things that you did were she was barking and I started petting her, and you're like, oh, don't do that, because that's reinforcing it. And I'm like, okay. And then we went back, took the harness off, because you were showing us why you use the collar.
Slip lead.
Yeah. And so we were walking back in after that, and I was like, man, that was worth the money right there. This year it was, well, the first year, one of the things, Chris Rowland was leading our group once we got divided up into teams. And it was just great because he just made us feel so relaxed. And Ellie was just through fetch, hold, and release. We were just starting fetch off the place board and throwing it, and then small retrieves. And weren't sure how she was going to react. And he just looked at us and he said, hey, he's like, every dog here, he's like, it's not a matter of if they're going to mess up and do something wrong, it's a matter of when. So he's like, take your time, and made us feel real relaxed. And she did her first retrieve kind of in the water and ran off. And so that was the first group and first thing she did. And started the keep away issue, and we've been dealing with that pretty big for the last year. But I think we'll talk a bit more about that. But this year going back, it was great. Met a lot of people last year and connected with more throughout the year. And so when we went back, we were staying in Airbnb with Matt and Megan and Jake and Katie, and they invited us to stay with them, which was great. And it was just awesome coming back to see everybody and the new people and Martin and you. And it was a great time. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. One of the things I really love about CGA weekend, like you said, going into it the first year, you're nervous because you're like, oh, how my dog going to perform? How are these people going to, are they going to judge me or whatever? But like everybody has been through the course and you're all learning the same thing. So they want to help. It's not like, oh, you're not doing this right. They don't belittle you or look down on you because of where you're at. Like, they build you up and encourage you and really try to help. And that was huge.
Yeah.
Because we've heard from other people, like when in hunt tests and stuff like that, everybody's kind of like real clicky and not super welcoming, but CJ is not like that at all. And that's been really great for us.
And the impact of the members weekend, I think, was huge, like doing the course and that. But when you, like you guys say, like your dog's not going to learn a lot in 3 days. It's more about the handler. And I had a call last year with your dad, Keith, and I remember him specifically telling me that he's like, you know, the dog's not going to learn a whole lot. He's like, you guys are going to, it's more about you as the handler. And it is very true. Like just watching other dogs, because you only have one dog and they only do things the certain ways, whether it's good or bad. But then somebody else has another dog and they do good in some areas and bad in other areas, and how like everybody works through it and handles it. And in the groups that you guys split up, there's always like a, you know, an ambassador or somebody who's mature that leads the group, and they kind of coach you along. And I think the biggest thing is like when your dog messes up, it, like you don't feel pressure. Like nobody, everybody's standing there. There's plenty of time. And it's like you, and Chris last year, he was like, all right, let's work on this. And it's not like, oh, get your dog back and then we'll move on. It's like, no, let's work through that.
Yeah.
And so that's the power of the weekend. And I would encourage anybody like listening who's debating about that, regardless of where your dog's at, it's like you should definitely come, because the experience is very good and helps a lot. So we're always super pumped when we leave the weekend. Let's go back and we're going to work on all this, so next year we can come back and do a little better.
That's awesome. So. And y'all have traveled from quite some way. It's really cool. This is the first podcast we've done with a couple on, which I love that. I just think it's amazing that you two, as husband and wife, are training your dogs together. I mean, that's gotta be amazing. So, I guess let's get into that a little bit. Let's get in y'all's background. Just a little bit how y'all met, and then how did we end up with dogs, and how do we end up here?
So I'm from Canada, Ontario, Canada, and Sherry's from Plant City, Florida. And we had typical Canadian from the East goes to Florida for the winter, the snowbird, and Sherry's living there. But we met online on a Christian dating site and got talking back and forth. I think originally when I saw her profile, like she was about 45 minutes away from where we holidayed. And so I'm like, oh, well, maybe I can meet her when I go down, and talked. And we're in our late 30s, so we're pretty straightforward people. And is this going to work? Is this going to work? And she was open to moving up to Canada. And so we started the importing process. So, which, anyways, it went great. Like she came up and saw, and then got married through COVID, which was a whole new experience. And, but we made it work, and we're living up in Canada. Come down quite regularly to Florida, which is not a hardship for me in the winter. But I guess we, like our story as far as the dogs, Sherry grew up with dogs. My dad had a dog, a black lab, when I can barely remember him. He always said, I have 7 siblings. So he said, 8 kids, no pets. And so
that's wild.
I didn't grow up with pets or a dog. And, but you did. What was your first dog?
We just had small house pets, like Shih Tzus. And my last one was a Shorkie.
Oh, yeah.
Shih Tzu Yorkie. So going from those dogs to a lab was quite different.
Did you ever think you'd have a lab, or like you were like thinking like, oh, I just need my little family?
Because
a lot of people have those type of dogs.
I mean, I wasn't biased to one breed or another. Like I thought at one time, like having a bigger dog would be cool.
Yeah.
My biggest thing when we first started talking about a lab was the shedding.
Yeah.
Because my dogs never shed. So that's been fun to deal with, all the hair and the shedding seasons.
That is that's part of that process.
Yeah.
It's unavoidable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the biggest thing with the lab was, when we were talking about getting a dog, after we got married, I just said, well, if we're getting a dog, I want a dog for hunting.
Nice.
So that's kind of how we moved towards that. And, a little bit, I was just on Instagram, and, Jake Barancott, he was on Instagram, and I saw a video of him using casting his dogs, and I had no idea what he was doing.
Wow.
But I was like, he just stopped this dog and then sent it that way with a hand signal. And so I just reached out to him, and he responded back, and I was like, are you a breeder? Are you, you know, or do you just train dogs? And so he was great. Like, basically unloaded information on me and gave me his phone number, and I called him and we chatted. And
wow.
He I was originally thinking about a Chesapeake Bay Retriever, but he was telling me that labs, the British labs especially, are a little bit softer and probably would be a better first dog.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad I took his advice and he gave me some recommendations for a breeder. And we settled with Shane Kendrick at James River Retrievers. And but yeah, Jake went through all the pedigree and if that mattered, if it didn't matter, and so helped us come to a good decision. And we called Shane and put a deposit in on a pup, and that was Christmas week.
Oh wow.
Yeah, Christmas week, yeah.
That's and then exciting.
Everything was, we were looking at all the dogs and that, and he told us about Cornerstone, and so we were looking into that and called it, got all excited. And I didn't really, well, I did once I talked to them, but I always kind of, in today's world, you think about something, then you go buy it. But it's like, yeah. Nope, you had to put a deposit on. And then it was like from Christmas to, we were picking her up in July. And I was like, man, this is going to be a long time. But
wow,
it, yeah, we made the jump. And I was telling you earlier, like Cornerstone, it was coming from Canada with the dog and Cornerstone. It's in US currency and yeah. Canadian, so it's about 30% more. And we were like, well, him and Han, because it's a lot of money up front. Yeah. And but it was probably the best money we ever spent. So
wow.
On the training program, both of us are very, we need like step by step. And I like to see video, and the aspect of you taking Violet through 52 plus and like, I noticed when we were looking up stuff on YouTube and that trainers were using like already trained dogs, but like what you see with 52 plus is it's just raw and there's stuff that goes wrong. So I always remember with Chris in the first CGA weekend, he was saying, have you got to the part in the course where Violet starts running off on Josh? And I was like, no. And he's like, cause that was what we were dealing with.
Yeah.
And so that whole aspect of the 52 plus is just awesome.
Wow.
But that's kind of how we got our dogs. And now we travel with them. And that's what we're doing. We were down visiting her family. And so we kind of plan it around the weekend and come back up and stop in and do the weekend and head back up. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. But
so you said you wanted to get a dog for hunting. What was your background in hunting? Did you grow up hunting, or is that something that you learned a little bit later in life? What's your story there?
No, I grew up hunting. My dad, my grandfather, he was a hardcore hunter and a pretty cool guy. I never got the chance to meet him. He had a heart attack before I was a couple months before I was born, but which was unfortunate. But he was like the truest hunter and carved all his own decoys.
Really?
And hunted out of a canoe. I was telling Matt at the weekend that my dad would tell me a story of a long time. I think it was when my dad was young, but grandpa used to have a hen mallard and he'd clip her wings and he'd tie her to the front of the canoe. And that was his calling. And he'd hunt out of the canoe. And I was like, man, that would be awesome. I don't think dad even experienced that. I think that was pretty long time ago, but yeah,
that's cool.
So I guess I'm third generation, hunting, and dad, like I said, had eight kids. And so he took a time off basically from when he started having kids to when my brother and I got old enough to hunt. So I think I was 17 or 18 when I could actually carry a gun in Canada. It's a little bit different than States.
Yeah.
But when I was able to carry my own gun, and then dad had one between Phil and him, he took us out, and It was a trial by fire, because he took us out and I think his idea was he was going to get us to shoot ducks, but he failed to tell us that we were shooting hooded Megansers, fish ducks. And then we turned around and cleaned them and ate them. And I just about puked because I was like, man, this is horrible.
That's hilarious.
But the addiction started early, because seeing those birds come in and setting out decoys out of a canoe, and we were using my dad's decoys that my grandfather carved for him, a set of common Goldeneye decoys, all wooden. And so, we grew up with it. And my grandfather had a lab and my dad had labs growing up. I don't think they were overly trained, but they use them for hunting. And So that's kind of where the dog aspect came from. And yeah, we hunt quite a lot now. And that's where getting a dog came from me. So that's why I said to her when we got it, I was like, well, I want to use it for hunting if we're going to do it.
That's amazing. Yeah, now you're doing a little bit of guiding too. Yep. Did you, when you were getting the dog, and were you already thinking about guiding at that point, or is that something that came a little bit somewhere a little bit later?
Yeah, it came a little bit later. We have a second dog now. That came more so for the guiding.
Gotcha.
So yeah, we had the opportunity to purchase an outfitter's license in Saskatchewan, Canada. And my brother and his wife and Sherry and myself, we made the plunge. We've been going out there. Dad took us out, I think 14 years ago.
Wow.
And drove out in a little Tercel because his dad had took him and his brother out when they were in their early teens and camped out by the Quail Lakes. And
wow,
they were using rag decoys and the stories that he told us. So we're like, well, we want to go. And it just took one trip, and then we've been going out every year since.
Amazing.
And it's a special place to hunt too. So we got the opportunity to purchase an outfitter's license with the support of our wives, because we'll be out there for a month and a half, 2 months now. And Sherry got to experience it this year. And that's one of the reasons why we wanted to do it, is because when you go out there and you see 10,000 snow geese in a field,
that's amazing.
It's pretty cool. And Cherry got to see the Northern Lights last year, and
really
snow geese and cranes and ducks and specks. And so we try to get her more out on the warmer hunts.
That's cool. A unique place. It's so amazing just to be able to see all of that. It's like mm-hmm. all the birds that are there, Northern Light. I mean, that's just incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And not very many people, which is always nice. I'm not so much a city guy, but yeah. So yep, but we're looking forward to it. This will be our first full year guiding for the about halfway through September to the end of October. That's when we're going to be going. So looking forward to it, and very excited that Ellie should be ready for the season.
She's going to be, I believe it. Yeah, she's so Ellie right now is a she. How old is Ellie currently?
She's almost two.
Almost two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so let's kind of dive into the training journey. So, were you on board with training the dog from the beginning? Like you said, did you think that you would want to train him? Like, what was the process there?
I didn't really know. I think we had kind of decided, because I work from home, that I would do the majority of the training during the week, and then Steven would do whatever he could at night or on the weekends.
Yeah.
So I was open to that. And it was definitely a learning experience. Ellie really from the beginning picked up on everything super quick.
Wow.
Like anything I threw at her, she like got it spot on every time. And so I was like, oh, this is easy. Like she's really easy to train. Like, and she was treat motivated, so that always helps. But then we got to fetch, hold, and release, and that's kind of where the wheels fell off for us. Yeah. We both did it, but made the mistake when she was a puppy. Like if she'd get a stick or anything in her mouth, we would just take it from her without giving her anything in return. And so that kind of created the keep away issue when the bumper was introduced.
Yeah.
And that has created problems for us for about a year now.
Yeah.
It was interesting to go from the obedience into the gun dog stuff where she had been doing so great. And then now all of a sudden she's not. It's like, what did we do? Where did we go wrong?
Yeah.
And I know all of her issues were created by us being inexperienced handlers, like never having done this before. So,
I mean, everybody's bound to face, it's what we call the trials and triumphs of training a gun dog. I mean, it doesn't matter how good you are, how many years you've been doing it, or little years you've been doing it, there will be something that you're going to face that will be a challenge.
Yeah.
And I think the beautiful thing about that is it's an opportunity, right? I feel like at the time it doesn't feel like an opportunity. Mm-hmm. It feels more like a hindrance.
Yeah.
But it really is an opportunity to grow as a trainer handler and in that bond with the dog. And I think just from what I've seen from y'all, that y'all have grown in that tremendously. Like from, I remember, like you said, when y'all first pulled up to member weekend, I came and said, hey, from where y'all were, you know, then to 1 year later to where y'all are now, just massive transformation. So y'all hit that stage. So you realize that maybe, did that have to do with anything like the scenario of where y'all are living? I know that we talked about like with the neighbors, like you don't necessarily have a fence and stuff like that. Or is it just like you just unknowingly thought, well, I just need to get this from her, or you're afraid she was going to swallow something and get hurt?
I think it was like the unknown.
Yeah.
Like, cause she doesn't just chew on the stick and then spit it out. Yeah. Like I didn't want her to swallow and then cut up her insides and stuff. So that was my
fear. It's a real problem. I mean, that happens to a lot of labs.
Yeah.
I was talking to somebody recently that happened to you, or my father-in-law, his dog ate a big rock. Now he lived. He was okay. It was a very expensive surgery. So I do get that, those concerns. So it's, you know, the mistake is a normal mistake that it can happen to anybody. So, so you ran into those challenges. So you were real happy. And then all of a sudden we go, you hit what we call the dip phase, where things kind of go south. Let's kind of talk from there. What was your mindset when you first started noticing it? Did you like think it was going to be a problem, or you thought you're just unsure?
I think we were a little unsure. We knew it was an issue, but we didn't know how long it was going to be an issue and how much time it would take to turn it around.
Yeah.
Yeah, we tried a lot of different things, and that's where the community is good, because like the Facebook group, like we went on, and any problems that we had, like from as soon as we got her home to this issue, we just searched the Facebook group, and if it wasn't in there, then we'd ask. But most of the questions have been answered multiple times from multiple different people, which is cool, because a lot of times like you guys are busy, so if like it might not come from you, but you've answered it in the past too. Yeah. So we just searched it up. That was one of the first things we did. And we tried everything. I think we put the check cord on her, and we could get her to do that. But the biggest issue was like we couldn't take the check cord off.
Right.
So we could get her to like come, and then she'd kind of go past us. And then we'd step on the check cord and she'd come over or drop it.
Yeah.
But the result wasn't happening like where she would come right in. And so we tried like through the advice of you guys and that, because she would seem to almost get bored too when we would introduce a new skill. Like we would change it up and do like a lane, like the lane. We'd take her out and do that, and she'd do good for like 3 days. And then she'd kind of just fall off.
Yeah.
She'd go and barely pick it up, kind of bring it back, but not really. And so then we were like, what's going on? And so then we'd try like outside, cut a natural lane, and she would do great. And we're like, all right, we're over this. And then, and we thought like the keep away issue, we'd just keep working on it as we like move forward in different things to keep her excited. But anytime we took that check cord off,
She just knew. She's like, she knew, oh, I'm free.
And like we tried working on her recall, and her recall isn't really bad, but like soon as like we could do it with the check cord on, and she's very smart. So she would just come right in, no problem. Yep. But as soon as you click that off, then she'd just start ripping zoomies around the yard. And, but it gave us an opportunity to try and figure out and solve the problem. So we kind of identified like through moving on and trying different things, like she likes to figure things out herself and make her decision to do it. And I think we were trying to force the issue too much. And that was like a big turning point for us. So like we wouldn't chase her. When she'd do the zoomies, we'd just stand there, wait for her to calm down and like come back and then with the check cord, and then we'd pick the check cord up and then start doing some obedience and lead her back into it. And then, but the check cord was still on. And so every once in a while we'd take it off, and in the wintertime we'd use a snow lane.
Yeah.
So it was like, she couldn't really run through the snow in that, but she found a way to get away. And, and then like we just learned one of the best things were to do, just cut the training off and come inside. And then she'd come back to the door, because you don't want to feed that bad habit.
Yeah.
So, one of the things that I guess, like to training today, and, maybe I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but the concept that really made a lot of sense to me is what you said this morning. It's like the magnet effect.
Yeah.
It's like when we push towards her, she would push away from us.
Yeah.
And like we were working on, which we'll probably talk about, is just walking away. And she like comes back to us.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think, you know, some of the times the problems were like, she was just growing and getting older, and we found that every time she went through her heat cycle, she'd kind of mature and calm down a little bit. And, but the issue talking to you, we called you a couple times, called Jake a couple times, talked to our breeder Shane, and all great ideas. But I think the biggest breakthrough was probably at Christmas. Sherry said, why don't, like, she likes running after the bumper. She just doesn't want to come back.
Yeah.
So like, she's not trusting us that we're going to throw it again, mm-hmm. or something like that. So she's like, why don't you try and take her up to the hallway and like either yank it out of her mouth because it's only 10 feet and then just keep throwing it and keep throwing it before she even gets back.
Right.
So she learns that you're going to throw it right away.
That's right.
So I did that. And yeah, the first day or so I had to like basically go up, but she couldn't go anywhere. So I just go up and take it out of her and just throw it to her.
Yeah. And she started learning. That's amazing. Yeah.
So that was a big kind of breakthrough. And I did that up in the hallway for probably about a week and just kept throwing at her. And it was good because it wore her out too. And then I moved outside, put the check cord on her and did the same thing. And she liked that. And then I even got to the point where I could take the check cord off for a bit. And, but then the formal, get the place board out, heel, sit, and not let her break, throw it. She would go and get it like a couple times.
Yeah.
Then she was like, nope, I want you to throw it every time.
Yeah.
And just do fun bumpers. And so then we kind of had to solve that problem. So we, up in Canada, we lose a lot of the seasons, kind of like your heat, but for us, it's snow. So we can't train because the snow gets real crusty and it's cold and it cuts up their paws. So from Christmas till before we were coming down here, Sherry started doing some stuff in the house, just simple obedience and retrieves. But we had a call with you and you encouraged us, just said like, if you can get one or two retrieves and then kind of put her up and then extend that out to up to 100 or so, the repetition is just going to form the habit of coming back automatically. Like she does those perfect repetitions, then it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, and that's concept has really been coming into fruition for me in the last month or so, because I've seen it. And like you said, that's basically the essence of training, is just good repetitions of an action that you want the dog to do. And so coming down in March, she had just gone through another heat cycle and she seemed to be even getting a little bit more mature. And I don't know if there's any correlation, but that's kind of what we noticed. And took her out into the porch that was kind of like a hallway. And it was about, I don't know, 10 yards, 15 feet or whatever. And I just put the place board down and I sat in front of it because we have her coming to deliver to hand right in front of us, not to the side. And I just would throw it, send her, no check cord. And she would, I noticed, I was like, whoa, she's doing this good. And usually she gets bored, but I was like, all right, let's do this. And every day I would only do 10. Like that's what I kind of noticed, that at 10, she would kind of start to bobble it and not be interested anymore. Oh, I should mention one of the other things that we did was we found a high reward. She really liked these freeze-dried treats that we got. So combine that and help get the result we wanted, but would send her out and do 10 at a time. And I think I was at it for a week or a week and a half and got up to 115. So I was like, okay, let's move outside because, anyways, but I was like, it makes sense. Like Joe said, like if you get 100, like she's doing the same thing for 115 times. Yeah. And she, I think out of those 100, she had two that were bad.
Wow.
And that was off the check cord. So I wasn't pulling her. And so I was super excited and like you say in the course, like with Violet, you don't want to get too worked up because she feeds into that.
Absolutely.
So I was trying to stay calm. And so I took her out into the yard and I was like, okay, how can I get her to like not blow by me? And so I just took two chairs and laid them down and put the place board on the, on my side. And then I just kind of extended it out to about 20 yards and I put the check cord back on her because you had told me like the, you know, a bad retrieve will kind of eliminate a couple good ones.
Yeah.
So you want to kind of cut off the bad and reinforce the good. So I was like, I'll just try this with the check cord on, came back, started perfect. And then I do about 8 or 9 and then I take the check cord off her and I kind of like put it at her feet and made it touch her back to think that it was still on.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So she did that. And then,
that's hilarious.
Yeah. So I started building up to about 25 and then I took the chairs away and just had the place board and it was open behind me. And, that didn't go as good. So I switched to like a natural where there was a hedge and put the place board there and threw it out. So she could go through, there was gaps, but it was more of a deterrent.
Yeah.
And, I did it each session and I was like, okay, the weekend's coming up. So I want to get her, get her ready. And I knew if I could get her close enough to where she was like pretty good, that the weekend would be a pretty good test because the pressure that all the dogs around. And then I'm like, if she actually does it in that situation, then we've kind of turned a page.
Yeah.
So we did, I think it was probably about 50 with the check cord on. And I would think I was at, before we left Florida, I was at about 20 without the check cord on.
Wow.
So, and I don't know if it's good or bad, but Ellie down there where Sherry lives, it's kind of in a subdivision and there's lots of dogs, lots of squirrels and lots of people. And
wow.
So one of the things I found was they have a floodlight in their backyard and I would take her out at night and like, she couldn't see any of that. Mm. And she couldn't, I didn't have to really worry about her running off after a squirrel.
That's pretty smart too. Yeah. That's
a good idea. So that's when I did a lot of off lead. So she ran out and come back and and I was about 25 reps with her off lead and then came to the weekend. So
man.
Yeah. But,
and then, weekend went pretty, incredible. I mean, that's a, I mean, if the dog is going to fail, it's going to be a member weekend due to there being so many other dogs. Mm-hmm. And that's what a lot of people like, if you haven't seen the member weekends, like we have all the dogs out at the same time. Every hand, like no, we're not running one dog at a time and then putting them back in the truck on the next dog. All dogs need to learn to perform whether there's other dogs there or not. Mm-hmm. And so that is where the intensity comes from. But I saw you retrieve with Ellie and she came back and delivered a hen with like 5 other dogs, 8 other dogs back behind you. How many was ever in your group?
Yeah, I think there was incredible. At least 6 or, because Jake had 3. Yeah, there was at least 6 mm-hmm. or 7 dogs.
Wow.
And they're all standing behind right where she's, you know, coming back to. And you see dogs a lot of times and they just want to go say hi. And so they kind of blow off what they're supposed to do and run back. And that's not bad. But like you said, like if she can do it at the weekend, I was looking forward to it. And the weekend started and Josh has a, I guess it was the Friday morning.
Yep.
You gathered everybody and cause Thursday morning, it was mostly just obedience and a couple of the more advanced dogs did retrieves through the group of people like spread out. So
that was pretty cool too.
Yeah. And I was thinking about doing it with Ellie and I'm like, no, that's too much. And that's what you and Barton always say, like, don't test, train.
Yeah.
And that's very important too. And, so anyways, Friday morning you gathered everybody and you gave a talk on like, you know, what you're feeling, the anxiety and stress or whatever it is, excitement, or if you think that, oh, my dog's not going to do this, then that feeds into the dog.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, all right. Josh says I got to make a mental note. Like she's going to do this.
That's right.
Cause for the last year, I mean, both of us like taking her out, it's like, when is she going to just go crazy?
Yep.
And so I'm like, no, I'm like, I got to put my, you know, my best effort into making it like were training in the backyard down in Florida, and she was doing perfect. It was just her and me. So anyways, we, I think it was the Y drill was the first one we went, and Jake was leading our group, and he knew where we were at too.
Yeah.
And he had seen her, but we went down and visited them during the year. And so he'd seen what we were dealing with. So I sent her, and she went out with the check cord on, and I'm like, okay, I'll just try with that. And she came right back in and delivered. And he's like, man, that was good. And I'm like, I know. So
that's incredible.
It was really exciting. But I think the highlight would probably be on day two, the Friday. We were doing a pattern blind with three buckets and
yep.
three different stations in that, and obviously we weren't going to do that, but in that scenario, and that's something I should mention too for anybody that hasn't been at the weekend, it's like in the groups that are divided up, the like when Barton divided us up, he said who here has a beginner dog, and then we put up, well, we were kind of beginner intermediate, and so we put up our hand, so every group had like a dog that was just beginner, an intermediate, and then a couple advanced dogs. So the stations are set up to where like the advanced dogs have something to do, and then the beginners, it just gets simplified down. And so with the pattern blind and three buckets, the advanced dogs could do the different ones and run to the different piles. But we were just working on, we would heel Ellie out, drop a bumper and turn it into a lining memory.
Yep.
And so that's what we did. I went out and heeled her out, dropped it and healed her back into about 50 yards and lined her, and she nailed it.
Amazing.
And so I took her off lead for the second one, walked her out, or I healed her out with the lead on, walked her back, took it off, and she brought her right back. And I was like,
I mean, that's a big moment.
Yeah.
After all that that you've been through in the environment with other people, other dogs off lead,
right.
She delivers. And I know like a lot of people are maybe listening to this that come from the different world, they're like, well, why would you not just slap an e-collar on, make that dog come back, right? That's part of the process. I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah, you could do something like that, but imagine what Ellie would be like today if you had done that. Like, her personality wouldn't be what it is, and no, it wouldn't be foolproof. You'd always be relying on that collar.
Mm-hmm.
You guys aren't going to be relying on a collar because you're taking the time to truly work with your dog. And when you consider all things, she's still young, not even mm-hmm. 2 years old yet. And
yeah.
So most dogs don't even get to the highest levels until, you know, 2, 3, 4, really probably 4 years old is when dogs are peaking at 4 years plus is when they're peaking. So that's really amazing that you didn't cave to the pressure of what most people do. And they do it all backwards, right? Let's get our dogs out there and hunt them at 6 months old, 8 months old. Let's get them some experience, see yeah. what that does for them. Well, then you ingrain bad habits. We talked about that earlier. Like, yeah, repetition is important. In low stress environments, it's going to take a lot of reps. But when you put a dog on a hunt, and if they get reinforced by picking up an actual duck, that smell, the gunpowder, the way that it just, the amount of intensity, like it will fully ingrain in their brain, one moment can really mess them up, versus when you're back at home training, it's super laid back and chill, therefore it takes more reps to get there. But by y'all not doing all that and you're taking the time to get to where you needed to with the dog, you're able to go through a simple process that takes time, and now, I mean, your dog performed and under the really one of the most difficult circumstances, 6, 7 dogs back behind you, people talking back behind you, your dog seeing other dogs work, and all the dogs are sitting there and watching. And when she's coming back, that dog's staring at you and all the other dogs, like it has an option, and it's a wide open field. You know, she could have gone anywhere,
yep.
but she chose to come back to you through just a deliberate process that Joel went through, which is just incredible.
Yeah.
And that's a huge win.
Yeah.
It's a huge win.
It was a, and after that, like, I think the, and after the group kind of went, I set her back up because I wanted to try and see if she'd run back to the bumper. And I knew, like, she's fairly advanced, and I knew she knew a lot more, but that problem of her coming back,
yeah.
like, hinders us from doing any more advancing through the training, and lined her to the bucket on a blind. She knew she had run to the bucket before, and she knew there was bumpers there.
Yeah.
And sent her off lead, and And it was kind of at the end when everybody was kind of going away, and I was just about jumping over the moon because she came back twice. And
she did it as a pattern blind that time, yeah. So you didn't walk it out.
No.
And that was a pretty long way. Did you do it the same distance that we were running from? Did you step a little closer?
Yeah, I was about 30 yards closer.
Amazing. With I mean, Ellie, still a long way.
Yeah.
Because those were pretty decently long retrieves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Ellie, well, I mean, you've seen her. Like, she's very fast eight, and she picks up a lot of speed coming back in. And so I'm always worried watching her just pick up speed coming back in, whether or not she's going to slow down. But yeah, I think that, like what you said about the e-collar, with training, if anybody's listening and they're in the situation of just getting a dog, like we talked about it before, like we wanted to train the dog ourselves, trust the process of like 52 plus, like we saw what you did with Violet.
Yeah.
I'd never trained a dog, but, just keep ourselves accountable. Like I went through a whole hunting season when I thought I was going to be hunting Ellie, and I had people being like, where's your dog? Where's your dog? Cause I told people I was going to have a dog this year.
Yeah.
And, Sherry, like I was accountable to her. And that's what I'd be saying is like, either find another member or somebody else to just hold you accountable to be like, hey, like you said, like you're going to have the dog for 10 or 12 years, hopefully, or, you know, and hunting it for 4, 5, 6 years. Yeah. Good. In the peak of its life kind of thing, and to not rush into it, because we were living firsthand what bad habits can create.
Yeah.
With chasing her and trying to take things out of her mouth. And so Sherry kept me accountable, and we just agreed, like, we're not going to hunt her this year, take time and train her and stick to what we, you know, what we said we were going to do. And with the e-collar, like we wanted to use that as like the last resort, because Jake had told us that, you know, they can become collar aware. So I didn't want to have her do good with the collar on and then not off and or not on, because it just wouldn't, you know, I'd have to have the collar on her like the whole time. Because especially for that coming back problem, that is everything. Like if she's just out in the yard and she only comes back to me with the collar on, I was like, he told me, he's like, if you can spend more time and just solve the problem going forward, you'll be a lot better off.
It's getting to that root of the symptom instead of just treating the symptom, right? Yeah. You call her a lot of times. Now if you use it right, you can utilize it totally. Not a bad tool, could totally be used right. But I'm a firm believer that you should learn to do it without it first. And then if you're going to use it later as just an extra like final layer of protection, or just for extra little reinforcement if you want to, but it's totally not necessary. I mean, dogs have been trained for centuries without technology. So it's totally, totally doable. Yeah. That's really incredible. Like, so if we rewind, dog runs away, fast forward, a little bit of work, dog comes back. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like,
so you can see the light at the end of the tunnel, I guess. You're starting to like, okay, this is working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what, honestly, we would encourage people too. Like, if you're having an issue, like, just be patient. Like, we were a year. And I mean, obviously, life happens too. Like, I get busy at work and Sherry, and also frustration doesn't obviously make you want to train if every session is like a nightmare and her running through the bush at 100 miles an hour. And I have videos of, it can get frustrating, but you know, this trust the process and those videos and the community helped us huge. Yeah. Like, you know, people were just encouraging us, not saying like, oh, you got to get rid of the dog or some other stuff, like fix it this way, fix it that way. They were just giving us solutions to try and it pays off in the end. So, cause when I think Sherry said to you today, it's like, it's odd to see her doing well, like what she is supposed to. Because
so used to seeing her fly off the rails, it's really cool to see her see it all coming together and it like kind of starting to click.
Wow!
Where she's like, "Oh, this is what I'm supposed to do."
Yeah,
yeah, so. She's very well trained. What's amazing is that she is like. So I took her this morning, and she just was snapping right with it. You know, first time I've ever really worked her. Off lead, heel, she heels when I say heel, sit perfectly the first time, first commands. That just goes to show that you've put in the work. It's just a matter of bridging those little gaps, right? Because that's what a lot of people don't understand about training too. And we talk about that in the videos, is the generalization stuff. You know, it's one thing for your dog to do it in one place.
Right.
Then when you start moving around, there creates little gaps in their minds. They don't understand it. Or another thing we talked about yesterday, which is a good like concept is it's like trailblazing, blazing a new trail. Whatever behaviors are created, that's like the road mm-hmm. that's paved, whether good or bad. If you want a new road to be paved, like they're going to go on the path of least resistance. So if this is something unfamiliar and there's like a bunch of trees in the way here versus this wide open road, well, whatever that be, we'll call it running around. This is what she's used to mm-hmm. with the sticks, and then it translates to the retrieving versus here. We want her to come back, but that's a foreign concept to her. Here's the wide open road running around. Well, naturally it's past the path of least resistance. Well, then you have to basically create a new path. And so that path is less traveled. And so the path that is most traveled is the one that's going to continue to happen. So as a mm-hmm. trainer, that's why I consider problems an opportunity instead of a bad thing. And that's what, I love to see the light click with y'all. And you realize that, and we talked about that, the member weekend too, and a lot of people are seeing that, is problems are really just an opportunity mm-hmm. for you to get creative, learn how to position yourself. And by position yourself, I mean, learn how you should respond as a trainer to get your dog to do the, to create the new path, and then to not travel the path that you don't want, right? Or for some people, maybe it's having issues on the dog healing in front, not listening, or some issues it's, the dog, chewing up some nasty ducks, right? A lot of hunt tests, they have nasty ducks. I've seen that. People have trouble. The dog gets their first duck at a hunt test, and man, they just start ripping into it. Okay, well, that's a pathway that's been created. Well, how do you solve that? Well, you got to create a new pathway. And sometimes you got to get pretty creative. And sometimes you got to do things as simple as you just have to, like, it's monotonous, right? 10-yard retrieves. And like in your mind, like, the dog's so much more capable. The dog could do 200-yard retrieves if she wanted to. If she could, she would. If she wanted to do it, she could. Now, that's true. If she could, she would. And if she wanted to do it, she would. So how can we get her to where she can? And how can we get the dog to where we want them to? Mm-hmm. And that's the beautiful opportunity about challenges and problems, is it allows you to position those things to where that happens. And once you unlock that, your problem is solved and you're better off because you've learned to problem solve for yourself too. That's what I love about the critical thinking skills. Like some of the things you said too, that I want to highlight. You said that as you were transitioning, how we talked about when you're transitioning, that creates little gaps in their minds on like, they're doing it right in one place, but when you transition to a new place, like when you went from the little porch to outside, it's a new thing, creates those gaps. And so what you did, you put the chairs there, you faded those chairs out, that didn't work. So you moved to the bush, and then from the bush that started going better. But then you had the problem of the check cord. Okay, well, she knows the check cord's on her. So what did you do? Well, you just kind of unclipped it, but you kind of wrapped it around her so she could still feel it. That's like one step in the right direction. You started bridging that gap. And then one day you try it without it, and you've done it enough that she does it right. And that's just that is how training happens. Y'all are the perfect mm-hmm. example of how to train a dog. Like that's why they call it training too. It's not just, we're not running drills, right? We're teaching mm-hmm. our dogs to do what we want them to do. And sometimes you're in situations where they're, they won't, like with Violet, honestly, the perfect dog for the videos. Unfortunately, that created some challenges for me. When we started, we were in an apartment, Abigail and I, and when we started the videos, like she was 10 weeks old. Well, I think Abigail came home from groceries one day, and it just hit the worst time it actually had happened. I was messing with Violet in there. She had a bumper. I was trying some inside retrieves. And she had this bumper, and then she just happened to ease over by the door. I was going to go get her. I didn't know Abigail was coming home. The door opens, and Violet sees the opportunity, the promised land, and she goes. She runs out. She goes down the stairs, and I was like, oh, goodness, I got to go check that out. And we're in the city in an apartment, and then my dog is free, about to potentially get run over. So I break the cardinal rule. I chase after her. And she was just loving it. She was having the best time of her life. And I finally caught up to her a long way later. And I was like, man, I hope that didn't cause me any problems. Well, sure enough, it was such an intensive experience for her. It definitely bled over into some of the training, which is a good opportunity for people to get to see that when we show and demonstrate, okay, well, Violet was having this issue and we worked through it on the videos. But it can happen in as simple as a stick, or it can mm-hmm. happen as simple as whatever. I mean, there's so many hundreds of scenarios that it can happen, but that doesn't mean that you can't overcome it like y'all did. I mean, all you did was just put in the work, and you didn't give up, mm-hmm. which is the main thing. And you didn't allow the easy mindset is, oh man, this just isn't going to work, especially as first time trainers. We should talk about that for a second. Yeah. Was this y'all's, I guess this was your first dog ever to train. So mm-hmm. What was your, how did you go from that uncertainty to where like you did you just kind of have that blind faith and trust? What was it that helped you? I mean, as a first time trainer, when you feel like things aren't working, how did you overcome that?
Well, I think from the beginning, we really underestimated how much time it really takes to train a dog. Yeah. Like, it's not just you go out for your four sessions a day and that's all I have to do.
Yeah.
Like, it's all the time. Like, when you take them out, if you want them to sit at the door before you open the door, like, you have to work on that. Sit before they eat. Like, it took us several weeks to get her to sit before we commanded her to eat her food.
Yeah.
Coming back when she's outside, when you recall her, like, there's lots of opportunity to work on the obedience outside of a formal training session. And I don't think we really thought that way.
Yeah, you kind of let them be free, except for during the training sessions, not realizing that could hinder, you know, it could hinder the other things.
Yeah. Wow. And we've since got another dog. He's almost 9 months. And we were very intentional with him, with the obedience. Anytime we go outside with him, we have treats in our pocket. If he comes to us, we treat him so he knows coming to us is a good thing.
When he picks up stuff, either call him to us and take it and treat him, or give him something else that he's allowed to have.
Yeah, a little trade-off trick. That's awesome. Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't necessarily even know what's happening.
Like, he's just happy either way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But when, like with Ellie, we would just chase her and basically take it. And she's like, you know, hey, I had that.
Yeah.
I didn't get anything for it. So what? And then that leads into, why am I coming back?
Mm-hmm.
So, I think I never even had a dog. Like, Sherry had a dog and she had a bond with an animal. And I didn't, like, it was pretty cool for me because, like, you're building, bringing them home. And like, even from, like, everything was new, like potty training. And that's what CGA solved for me. It was because I'm like, how do you train a dog to pee outside? Like, and go to the door? Like, you know what I mean? And then the concept of learning where you say, like, you have to teach the dog to learn with the clicker and treat, like, no verbal commands. Like, they touch the placeboard, you click, and then they're on top of the placeboard. Then you click and treat, and then you add the verbal command. And it's just fascinating to me to see it all play out. And that's how you know it works, is like when that dog first touches the placeboard and you click and treat, and then like 2 weeks later you say place and it goes and sits on and clicks and treat, right? Like, that goes all the way through. And I think we knew that, like, in a sense, like, we had faith that it would work. Like, we would venture and try other little things that we came up with, but it just went off the rails, and we go back and watch the videos and go back to exactly what we were supposed to do.
Yeah.
But it was, if you have a bond and like you care about the dog and you, like Sherry says, you work on the obedience with it, and it'll work. But yeah, definitely underestimated it. And I think more importantly, like, the generalization is so important.
Yeah.
Like, 'cause you can get your dog and you see it, it's perfect at healing in the house. And then you take it outside and it's like, you know, and I'm sure some people saw us with Diesel, our youngest, at the member weekend. And I was down in Florida and he was off lead, healing perfect. No problem. Put him on lead. He was pretty good. Come to the weekend and he just is like jacked up, wants to go say hi to everybody. And I'm just holding on for dear life. And I'm like, what is going on? But I mean, we hadn't really taken him to any stores or he hadn't been a whole lot of people. And so Sherry and I were trying to get him calmed down. We held him farther back from the groups and that. And finally we just put him up and said, like, we had to work, you know, we'll work on that. But we were also very focused on Ellie because, that was kind of our main focus this weekend, because Diesel he's farther behind in the training than he's younger than what Ellie was last year.
Yeah.
But yeah, like with the training, the generalization I think is super important. So if you think your dog's good, then just take it to a new area, introduce it, and that always reinforces it even more.
Yeah. But a lot of people don't get that on the hunts too. Why we always end on a mock hunt is that the first goose setup we did, the first two dogs that ran, I forget exactly what happened, but somehow I think one dog was sent and another guy sent his dog, and the other dog saw the other dog going, so it chased after it. And I was like, you know, and then also some of the dogs had never been in a Rig'em Right field blind versus some of them have been in a Momars. Right. So when they're first sitting down, you know, they're having to like fight with their dog to get it into the field blind instead of the Momars. And I'm like, well, this is why we do this, because this is training. You go out on your hunt, it's 4:50 a.m., 5:30 a.m., whatever, it's dark, it's cold. Lots of distractions. If there's ice, chainsaws, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff going on. Could you imagine trying to teach your dog with that amount of chaos versus in a controlled environment, which you're preparing them? Because once you teach them, then they get it. Okay, now they're good to, in this environment. And then we scale it up a notch. We have the calls, we're calling, shooting, the whole nine yards to where it feels like a real hunt. And then when they go on a real hunt, it's like that. That's no different. If you can train, the only way to create that intensity is to create that amount of excitement. And it's hard to duplicate that in a lot of scenarios, but when we have everybody there, it's pretty easy to do that. So that generalization principle applies to the hunts too. I mean, I can't tell you how many dogs, like we had a guy buy a dog from us one time and we told him, you know, like this dog was trained and partly trained. It was well trained. I mean, it could do, it was ready to hunt. It could do hand signals, stuff like that. It wasn't what I call fully trained, but far enough along that it was huntable. I hate that we sold this dog. It was a fantastic dog, but the guy called and said he wanted it. And so we put it on the plane and sent it to him there in Texas. And then we told him, like, you need to give this dog 2 to 3 weeks to acclimate to you and all this. Well, we get a call the next day at like 8:30 a.m. and he is already hunting the dog. He got the dog that night. The dog didn't even sleep. And dog sees cows for the first time because the guy's just letting it follow him on the four wheeler. And all that worked out. He was scared of cows. The dog was scared of cows because it was dark and running into big old cows. And they get in the blind and they shoot the first volley of ducks. And so he sends the dog. The dog swims out. He touches she touches the duck with her nose and then turns around and comes back. And at that point, that's when he's calling. I said, hey, I thought you said this dog was trained. We're like, well, first of all, I told you 2 to 3 weeks, but give it a little more time. Let the dog figure it out. The dog is trained. It knows how to do it. We get a call that afternoon after a few more volleys. We told him to go ahead and throw the first, like go out there in the boat, get the duck, and then throw it out and give it a couple of retrieves. And they did that. Then by the end of the day, the dog had figured out what it was and he was very ecstatic. But that's just a case of like he could have avoided that and it still worked out. And yeah, you can. It's good to generalize things. Like, you know, people are like, well, you know, can't they figure it out? Yeah, they can. I'd prefer them not. When I show up, I want it to be in order, ready to go. So it's really good to prep and do that generalization. And that's going to pay off for y'all. You told me something earlier that got me excited. And you're like, you know, I didn't want to be coming on here saying, yeah, well, I shouldn't have hunted my dog early, but I did. And you made that decision to wait it out. And she's not even 2 yet. So by the time she hunts, she'll be 2 years and some change, which is really a perfect time to be hunting a dog because your experience with hunting her at that age, she'll be fully trained by then, more than likely where y'all will be at in the program. We're pretty close and she's going to do really good. So that's what a lot of people don't understand, right? Is it seems like it's going to take longer, but it doesn't. In the grand scheme of things, it actually is shorter because at 2.5 years old or 2 years old, you've got a dog that gets it. They've got all the concepts, the foundations are there. And they're performing like a 3 or 4 year old retriever on a hunt that, you know, has a lot of experience. And that's what a lot of people just, they make those mistakes is those early hunts a lot of times creates problems. Like we talked about those highways that have to be rerouted and it takes a long time to reroute a highway. It's best to build the roads once if you can, but if you have to build them more than once in the case of like the keep away, that's fine. Mitigate the problems. How many problems can we mitigate and avoid, which is what we try to help people do to the best of our ability. But sometimes it's just going to happen too. Some things are inevitable, but the big thing is you just got to work through it like y'all have done. And y'all have done a really, I mean, like I said this morning when I was able to take Ellie for the first time, you know, remember weekend, I didn't really get the chance because we're running around so much the previous year or this year. But when I was able to take Ellie for the first time, say, hey, let me train her for a second, you know, and then I say heel and she just starts healing with me like she knows what to do. And she doesn't even know me. I mean, to me, that's a, first of all, that's a sign like you've done a good job, because if a dog will heel with a stranger on the first command, like you've clearly drilled the reps in, like she gets it. And then stop when I say stop and then retrieve when I say retrieve with little effort, zero effort for me other than just giving the commands. That means you clearly have done a good job with her. So
thank you.
You should be proud.
But couldn't have done it without you guys. That's for sure. So, because I said to Sherry multiple times, I have no idea where where she would be without it. And I've been on hunts with dogs that people have trained by themselves or off YouTube. And it's, I see a lot of, issues that could be solved easy, like with the course.
Yeah.
And, like I said to you before, it's like the money is well worth it. That's for sure.
That means a lot. And I think a lot of people don't understand too, like the standard we're trained to is extremely high, right? Mm-hmm. Our standards are premium. Mm-hmm. Why are they that way? Because why not? Mm-hmm. Why settle for something when you don't have to settle, right? You know, we never, no one should ever have to settle because they didn't know what to do or because there was an issue or because they were just misinformed, because there's a lot of information out there that's confusing. Like you said, you know, I see it in Facebook all the time. Ask a question, you'll get 50 different answers and you left more confused than when you started. You're better off not to ask in the groups, because that's what's going to happen. Then you're going to be like, well, I don't know. You then have to sort through and decide which answer is right and which answer is wrong. Yeah. Now, fortunately, in the case of our group, is it's all centered around the course. So it's that will help guide you through the process. But, you know, it's definitely a process, and it's just something that takes little by little to get where you want to go. Mm-hmm.
So. Yep. Yeah. It's been a good experience. So it's, we've learned a ton too. And
that's awesome.
Nothing will teach you more about patience than a dog. That's for sure.
Yeah. So how do y'all feel like right now compared to them when you first started?
Good. Yeah. I feel like a accomplishment for sure. Wow. Like my brother comes over and I show him, and we've had people that are like even mystified, like that Ellie will go and sit on place.
Wow.
And I want to say to them, yeah, you know how long it took her? Like how many like consistent, you know, repetitions that it takes to do that. And it's an accomplishment. Like even just getting them to go to place and sit, it's like that takes a whole process, but it's so fun when you see it come into fruition. And like Ellie today, when she was doing the retrieves and coming back, and we had her since she was a puppy and then worked her all the way through. And that's that, that obedience part before you get into the gun dog skills, like nothing seems like it takes longer than that. Cause I'm like, let's go. Like you haven't thrown a bumper to the dog at all.
Yeah.
But that foundation is so important cause it plays into the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And, but yeah,
it is amazing how that window feels like forever, but then in the grand scheme of things, the rest goes so quick because that foundation is what you build everything on. And once it's built and solid, you're in construction, you get that, right? If something's wonky, then you have to try to work through it. That's the biggest thing. Foundation's everything. You get that right, you don't have to adapt to a lot because everything flows. You miss foundational pieces, you got to get super creative to make it right, to make it look all even like it should.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's definitely been a roller coaster of emotions. You start out with this puppy who's cute and willing to learn, and then they get to a certain age where they're like, meh.
Yep.
I forgot everything you've ever taught me. And then, you know, our issues that feed into her from what we've done. And then now seeing her perform like she's supposed to is crazy. Like
it's amazing. Yeah. What's amazing too is that everybody's going to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. I mean, seasoned trainers, people that have trained well are making sometimes simple mistakes. I make mistakes with my dogs. I mean, it's going to happen. But it's cool that the mistakes don't have to define you. I mean, look at those mistakes. Yeah, we did that. Oh, well, now you get to work through it. And that's the beauty of it to me. And I think that's amazing. Like everybody's trying to be perfect. They're trying to, I don't want to do anything wrong. Well, that causes people's fear of doing things wrong, causes more problems with their dogs than anything.
Yeah.
Because when you're afraid to do something wrong, it prevents you from doing the right things. And it just does. So, I told somebody at member weekend because they had a concern. I forget exactly what it was, but I said, it's really hard to mess up a dog. I think they had a 6-month-old dog.
Yeah.
They had some questions about it. And I was like, it's really hard to mess up a dog because like they're super forgiving too, right? You make a mistake, that's okay. They're going to make a mistake. We got to be forgiving as well. Mm-hmm. And you would have to basically try, because we'll have members that come in
with three-year-old dogs that they've gotten that have washed out from training or somebody has essentially abused, forcing them, and they just did a bad job at it because they didn't understand how to train dogs really. Therefore, they didn't do a good job, and the dogs are basically a basket case. And we've been able to see some of those be regenerated and turned into a really good dog. So if that can happen, you know, anybody that has due diligence and care that's actually implementing and doing your best, you don't have nothing to fear. Just give it your all and it's going to work out. And that's the way it does. And y'all have done a great job and are a great example of that. Just a simple little mistake, but you're able to work through it. And I think you're probably better off for it now because you learned the principles of like, okay, this is how dogs learn. This is how I train things. I bet you'll never forget those lessons and you'll be able to apply them. And all your future dogs are just going to be even sharper and sharper. And same for Ellie. She's getting sharper. I mean, she's incredibly sharp. I mean, when I say sharp, she's just crisp on her response, which is amazing. And that's what a lot of people don't have. You know, their dogs just don't, they're just, it's just a little bit off. And it's that little extra effort that y'all put in that's made all the difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm pretty excited for her first hunt. And I mean, even talking with you guys, like, and learning from, you know, the problems that we've had is like, we have to set her up for success too.
Yeah.
So I'm going to pick a good non high pressure hunt and, Sherry will be there and hopefully get my brother to film it and that. So it'll be pretty cool. And, I think that's where it'll be a lot of fun. Like that's where you see the training pay off and we'll really get to enjoy it. Cause like take her out and watch her retrieve tons of birds and it'll be, but the thing that we've learned is like the training continues. It's not that's like right. You get to the first hunt and hey, it's home free. Yep. It's like, you know, you see at member weekend, like people with dogs that are 4 or 5 years old and they started from a puppy. It's, they still have to work on things and maintain the dog skills. And, but it's pretty cool to watch. Like you said, like it would be pretty hard to mess up. Like even Ellie with her different habits that we have, it's like at the member weekend, I wasn't focused on her holding the bumper right in the middle.
Absolutely.
I was like, if she brings it back by the string, but as long as she comes back, cause that's what we're trying to solve. We can shape that later.
Yeah.
You know, and, but that core principle of her coming back to me is what we were working on.
Yeah.
So I think that's important too, that we've learned too, is if they're doing one area of the retrieve wrong, it's like, don't sweat it too much if you're trying to introduce something else. Like,
absolutely.
You don't have to get onto them for absolutely not coming back perfectly or something like that. If that's an issue,
you can squelch a lot of good things. You know, it's really like my dad calls it the peripheral. You know, there's what's right in front of you. And if you're just single-minded and that's all you can focus on versus you got to be able to operate in that peripheral a little bit too, which is just like you said, exactly what you just said. You know, if I get onto them too hard here, but I'm messing up this other stuff, which actually may be more important. When in reality, if you fan the flame here that the dog's doing good and kind of work on that problem a little bit later, you can actually end up getting everything that you want.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
Yeah. And that's another really good aspect of member weekend is because everybody's training a dog that's there for the most part and they're watching you and like you are focused on what you're doing, but they might see something there and be like, hey, like, I mean, you gave me a correction today with treating her after I said sit 3 times and then I treated her and you're like, well, don't make sure you don't do that. And it's like, I was just like, hey, she sat, but I didn't realize what I was really doing.
Yeah.
And remember weekend and even with Sherry, like I'll watch her train Ellie and then she watches me and we pick up on different things and training in a group and remember weekends is very good for that. So, and that's the thing, like it's not at member weekend. That's why I say it's so impactful for us as handlers is because nobody's being like, hey, you're screwing up. They're just like, hey, you know, I made this mistake and I see you doing it. Just make sure like, this is a way you can correct that. And it's very valuable for the 3 days that you're there can advance you huge as a handler.
Yeah. That's why we really like to mix up those groups too. You know, 1 year we did it and we had all the young dogs with one. All the old dogs with one, we're like, man, this doesn't feel right. And then when we started mixing the groups like the way we do now, the cool thing is the more experienced people are also learning too. Because when you're looking at someone who is where you used to be, you're starting to learn things and you see them do something like, oh, I did that. Mental note, I just learned, right? And also everybody's able to help each other in those aspects. So it's Man, I just love it. And I love having you guys down here for Member Weekend. Now, Sherry, for you, I got a couple of questions. Just, I was thinking, what, I want to hear your perspective on, like, so obviously if he was running the dog, like, but you are very invested in the training because you've done, I guess y'all have equally inputted on the training. Honestly, mm-hmm. y'all probably both put in as much work as each other in a lot of capacities. What was it like watching, like knowing that that's your dog, you did all that work too, and he was running her on that first time when he took that lead off? Like, what was your first thought? And did you run, or did he run it first off lead? Or yeah. Okay. And so you were kind of watching.
At Member Weekend?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I actually didn't get to see a whole lot because I was with Diesel. Yeah.
Oh, you were running Diesel.
Back
okay.
with him, okay. trying to get him to
get whipped into shape
with the program. So, yeah. And I would put him away. So I really didn't get to see a whole lot, which was kind of sad, but
that's okay. We got a really good video of the challenge that we did this year.
Yeah.
You walking him out there or walking her out, walking Ellie out, and she did good.
Yeah. So. That was a fun part this year that you guys added to a little bit of a challenge between the groups. But
I think too, like, even though I didn't get to see it, seeing him handle her, even though, I mean, you could get bitter, be like, I did all that work and now you're getting the reward, but like, we're equal partners, right? Even like husband and wife, like, it's really cool to see us both aspects of our training show in her.
Yeah.
And how each of us, like, we handle her a little differently, but mostly the same. And just to know that we both have incorporated and given to what she has learned and where she's at is cool to see.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. And what is really cool is y'all do handle a little. I mean, y'all are clearly on the same page, right? Otherwise, you'd be having issues, right? The dog would be, like, listening to one better than the other. But Ellie and Diesel listens to both of you all the same level. Y'all are, that's really, really cool to see that dynamic. Mm-hmm. And it's also cool to see just how you worked her this morning. You know, one of the things we kind of talked about this morning was the magnet principle and utilizing that to your advantage, but also not like the leadership principle of, like, you know, if the dog isn't going exactly following along, like, we feel that we have to, like, make it happen. But the principle of, like, well, we're going to put the responsibility back on the dog. We're actually going to give the dog room to fail. Mm-hmm. We're going to give the dog those opportunities to. And when you do that, the dog will pretty much should rise to the occasion. If it doesn't, it gives you the opportunity as a handler. Like, I view the thing we said, we want to view ourselves as a helper more than anything. A lot of times people get that pack mentality, and I think they misunderstand the alpha mentality, which thankfully y'all don't. Y'all got it down pat. But I want to say that because I know somebody listening to this needs to hear it. The you know, they're like, oh, domineering. Well, that doesn't actually work as mm-hmm. good as being a true leader. A true leader is a helper. Our job is to support and help those dogs unlock their potential. We're not making these dogs do anything. They're already built and designed the way God made them to do these things. And so it's our job to unlock that potential. And so when you view things from that perspective, it gives you a different mentality that allows you to respond differently. And those were one of the things that we talked about that I thought was cool. And to see y'all apply it this morning and how, like, it was like clicking, the dogs are lining up, right? And it was amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's a pretty cool process. So, yeah.
That's awesome. What's, okay, so where we're at now, we're on our way to hunting season. I'm assuming that's where your mindset's going to, prepping, right, with guiding. Ellie's going to be your first dog in the guiding program. What's your next steps? What do you think you're going to do to prep for getting her ready for those first few hunts?
I think basically just try and think of, well, we're excited because, like, we've been stuck around, I think, week 20-ish.
Yeah.
For a long time, but just moving forward. But
yeah, mid-20s, right? Where's yeah. Where you're transitioning to the field for retrieves.
Yeah, and that's it's exciting because, like, now she's coming back. I know, like, we've done lining 180 marks and lining memories and yep. just progressing through. But I think the biggest thing that we're going to focus on and learn from this whole experience is that we need to focus on the repetitions, like not speed through it. But anything we'll probably – anything that we think we're going to run into is a situation or – and basically introduce a new skill for her is to get those repetitions
yeah.
in different scenarios, that generalization. Like if she is good in this area, like we were saying, we saw this morning when we trained, it's like take her too far out and she blows by us. But if you move her back, and then she came right in.
Yeah.
And then, so just working on that, I think that's the biggest thing. Go home training, but keep those positive experiences in the foresight, whatever she's doing. So try to set her up for success, right?
Yeah.
So, and then get those wins and then keep getting them. But yeah, like I honestly haven't looked too far in advance in the videos, but I think we'll go through it pretty quick now.
You will, without question. It's
yeah.
I call it the walk, jog, run. You're basically transitioning to the jog, and like within a couple of weeks, once you advance, you're into basically the run phase. You'll introduce so much back to back to back. And the reason you can do that is because that foundation is laid, and it's just as simple as adding one component and one component. And it all fits together because you built that foundation, right? But one thing I want to highlight, what you just said there is, you know, focus on the repetitions, right? A lot of people, but don't underestimate the value. And I know you don't, because like you get this concept now, the value of one rep. I think you're saying something that a lot of people like go, they just are going through the motions. Like they want to, how fast can I get there? I'm just ready to get there. The journey is not the end destination. It's that one rep at a time. Every rep you do will add to it. And like you're by you saying what you just said, you're taking each rep seriously because each rep is one step closer. It's just simple, a one step, one retrieve. Then you do another and then another and you just keep doing it. And then you end up there.
Yeah. Yeah. But do that. And then I think we'll just basically try and set up a hunt that we can get her out on and have a couple spots where we won't shoot a ton of ducks, but it would be more like one comes in at one time. But we got to introduce her. Gunfire, she's fine on. We've done the launcher with her and with the shotgun. I know it's a little bit louder, so we'll introduce her to that and get her prepped on that. But another big thing will probably be, and we were talking about this actually on the way over, is like when we introduce birds.
Yeah.
It's like if we make sure those repetitions and are in place and she's done, you know, whatever, 200 or 250 reps and came right into us and obeys us in that, when we introduce a bird, something new and exciting and smell and wings and that, then we won't be losing ground. Like she won't run off. She'll come back in. So I think those are some big obstacles that we have to, because Ellie's very much, when you introduce something new, you saw it with the launcher bumper, when she gets something that she really likes, nothing else matters.
Yeah, and that's pretty wild.
So
yeah, she is loving that launcher bumper.
Yeah, but no, we're pretty excited. I gotta keep my excitement down, and I think the morning of the hunt will be definitely a lot of excitement.
Oh yeah.
But we'll I think I'll try to like you said, to simulate the hunts first, like take her skeet shooting in and add another shooter if my brother's out, and then also maybe if I can anyways go to the spot before season and throw some bumpers out for her, so she's already familiar with that, get some wins.
That's smart.
So yeah, but maybe we'll have to come back on and tell you how the hunt went.
Yes.
Later on, maybe next year.
Absolutely. So. We definitely need to do a follow up. I mean, we got a lot of, plus we'll be talking a lot about diesel on the next podcast. So 9 months old by the time we get there, a little almost 2 years old, I guess, around that time, or give or take some change. So we'll talk about diesel and just follow up and see how your season went too, because I believe you'll be able to hunt Ellie pretty early in the season. I think with where y'all will be at, especially with the weather getting the way it is up there for you guys. So it's going to be amazing. But I just want to honor both of you guys for what you've already done so far. I mean, people that have never trained a dog before, you've been able to do it. And I think you just did it because you wanted to. You put in the work and you made it happen. And, you know, we appreciate you guys, because we couldn't exist without what y'all do. I mean, if y'all didn't implement it, you know, no one would ever know, but y'all did it and you're out there facing those battles. And, you know, it's amazing to face this. It, as simple as it is, as each battle, the battles don't feel simple at the time. They feel overwhelming. They feel,
very challenging, or honestly at times hopeless, but keeping that positive mindset and belief that, hey, we can do this, and seeing y'all do that and seeing y'all overcome that. And now you have a dog that just had one simple problem. You already built the rest of the foundation, and y'all work basically on the backside of that. I would consider you're on the downhill slope, if not basically finished with that problem. So moving forward, you're going to be able to just see massive progress. So I'm proud of both of y'all. And I think, again, I just think it's so cool how the dynamic that y'all have, where y'all both are putting in the training for both the dogs. Like, you're both equal partners, as you said, just putting in that work. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just, I think it's amazing. So I want to ask both of y'all this question. Normally I only have one person to ask this question. What would be some of your just kind of final thoughts that you would share with somebody at this point in time? You know, maybe advice if you could give yourself or someone else in your shoes, What would be your best advice that you could give, something that you've learned?
I think a couple of things for me. One, being intentional with like what you say. Like earlier with him telling her to sit three times, and like on the third she finally sat.
Yeah.
No, like when you tell her to sit, she needs to sit the first time.
Yeah.
And I think it's easy for us to be like, oh no, sit. Like not waiting for them to do the action.
Yeah, giving them that opportunity to make those mistakes or the success.
Because you're like, I don't know, we think differently than dogs do. And I think oftentimes we don't remember that in training. We think like a human does. And like, so being intentional. And then also, don't sweat the small stuff.
Hmm. Like, that's awesome.
Sometimes I get to... like, oh, you have to be this way. And like, I don't think outside the box. I'm very like, okay, this is what the course said. This is what I have to do. And like learning your dog and how they learn. And it's not going to be the same with every dog. And
that's awesome. Those are really good pieces of advice. Mm-hmm. Everybody should
I know
take
they
notes.
All sound cliche, I'll but it's true.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
I think for me, I would say, like, we were going through the course again with Diesel, and we're right now, we're just went through where you're working with Violet in the lane and throwing the bumper.
Yeah.
And I didn't catch it the first time, and I might not have watched it, but because you might have watched it, but I should have watched it. But you said, get the 5 retrieves, because at the end of the week, you'll have 25 retrieves or whatever it is. And I didn't realize like how important that was.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and we've even talked about it. Like, if we introduce her, you know, off the lead, like extend her to 50 yards and then get 10 retrieves or whatever, you know, we kind of feel that makes her secure in it. And like that, don't skip over that stuff, you know, don't do, I mean, if you're having a bad day or whatever, and you can get 2, but you know, like you said, at the end of the week, you're going to have this many repetitions of that.
Yeah.
And how important that is. So I think that would be, for me, is like, don't skip through those, even though it seems trivial.
Yeah.
It's like just going to the place board, sending her to the place board 5 times or whatever it is. Go through the process, and because you got to trust the process, and it'll pay off.
Yeah.
So you might not think about it. Oh, she did it perfect twice. Okay, let's move on. It's like those repetitions form habits, like, and those stick with the dog.
Wow. So, man, those are 2 solid pieces of advice, or 3. Those are, I mean, that's incredible. That's noteworthy. That's very noteworthy. Mm-hmm. Well, it's been an honor to have both of you on here. It's been an honor to spend the weekend with you, get to train with you, hang out, eat some lunch, and just connect with you guys. Again, we're proud of both of y'all for what y'all have done. I look forward to continuing this relationship and friendship, and also just seeing how things continue to go. It's going to be, again, like you said, I would love to do a follow-up, and we'll get to tell the world how things have gone over the next year. And just, man, I'm excited for you guys. And we'll also link you down in the description if you're on YouTube. We'll link your guide service down in the description if anybody wants to find it. I mean, world-class hunting and some of the – basically the best – if you want to kill some ducks and geese, I mean, that's about as good as it's going to get. So appreciate you guys so much.
Well, we appreciate you and taking the time to do the videos and put in the effort to make the course, because I don't think we'd have a dog probably – and at least not one that's this good without it. So, and even calling behind the camera, spending the time filming everything. And Yeah, but we really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. So looking forward to continuing the journey and for next year's member weekend. So, and building more relationships too with the other members.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Well, thank y'all.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Build From Here podcast. To learn more about retriever training or our podcast, visit cornerstonegundogacademy.com/podcast.